Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on chumbacasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at chumbacasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's chumbacasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Everyone at Ipswich was great in how they dealt with the situation. You know, they knew what was going to come my way. They knew the animosity that was shown against me. I understood the animosity that was going to come my way. And, you know, I took a lot of grief that day and many subsequent days since.
Hello, buddy. It's me, producer Ross, and welcome to another edition of Ross Meets. And this is the season 2 finale. I want to say a big thank you, as ever, to all the listeners who have listened to the series so far. And also a big thank you to all my guests that have took part, shared their stories, shared their memories about their career and their time at Town. And, you know, we're living in weird and strange times at the moment. So hopefully I brought you some entertainment, memories to look back on. And it's just been really good fun. And series 3 is coming as well. So I'm looking forward to bringing you that in the coming months. But yes, the season 2 finale, here we are. And let's get into it. My final guest of series 2. And it's a man who, well, crossed the divides playing for them up the road. And of course, Ipswich Town. And yes, it is former Town goalkeeper Andy Marshall. And this was a great chat with Andy to talk about his career and his time at Town, from his early beginnings at Norwich to then making that move to Ipswich back in 2001. A massive move that at the time. And well, we opened all the doors of his career and I did enjoy chatting to him. He's a very good talker. Talked about his other spells, of course, playing for Millwall in the FA Cup final against Manchester United. It was on the losing side, of course, but what an experience for him. Definitely when he was on loan from Ipswich Town at the time, which was just madness. But it was great to hear his stories from that. Also, his spell at Coventry, Aston Villa, and then returned to Millwall for making that decision to retire. And he's now been at different coaching roles at Aston Villa. He was actually took charge of one game in the FA Cup. And it was against Leicester. And he's got a win there. So not a bad record as a manager. And then, of course, now he's currently at Charlton as the goalkeeping coach. And he spoke about his time, the ups and downs at his time at the Valley so far. But yes, it was a great chat with Andy. I really did enjoy it. Hope you guys enjoy it too. A big thank you, as ever, for listening to the Ross Meets. Let me know. Give me some reviews on the Apple Podcasts. Which player you've enjoyed listening from so far in this series. And players you'd like to hear from too in Series 3 and beyond. So thank you, as ever, guys. I will be with you very shortly again. Let's get into the episode. Sorry for always rambling, but let's get into it. How you been in these strange times we've been living in?
Yes. Do you know what, Ross? The thing about it, we were speaking about it the other day, at our place at the football club, and, you know, to a certain extent, it's not really had a massive difference to our lives.
Yeah.
I know we haven't got fans in the stadiums, but every day we still go in and work as normal. You know, where a lot of my friends, a lot of people down the road where I live, you know, they've been sat at home for the last 7-8 months. At least we're able to get out and about and do pretty much more of our normal things. So, you know, I don't feel it's greatly affected apart from the initial lockdown.
Yeah, because, you know, Charlton at the time, they were still in the Championship and, you know, your season continued and, you know, say League That's One, it. League Two finished, so you were able to carry on, and unfortunately relegation and other different things that came into play there. But how was, like, going to away games and stuff? I'm sure, you know, you guys stay over, so I'm sure the hotels are always interesting.
Yeah, so that's where you do notice a difference. Like, when we're in the Championship, we went on two coaches, a mini coach, and then every single member of staff had to drive. So literally, you had these big VIP coaches, and there was literally about 6 or 7 people on them. And, you know, we all had to travel separately, and then you'll get to the hotels. The hotels were all locked down. No one else was in them. You know, you'll get served your food in your rooms. It was mad. It was mad. You know, you understand the reasoning behind it.
Yeah.
But it was just bizarre. You know, really bizarre.
Yeah. But thank you very much for speaking to me for this. I know it's always an interesting one to talk about your time at Norwich and Ipswich, but it's one of those things, really. You know, it's a massive thing now because we've got Paul Lambert in charge. You know, he was
a very successful time at Norwich, and unfortunately he's not had so much success at Ipswich, but you know, it's happened. Yeah. It's happened.
Yeah, well, obviously I worked with Paul at Aston Villa as well.
Yeah, definitely.
A player and a coach, and you know, and Stuart Taylor is number two, and Walks, the goalkeeper coach, you know, I know from playing against him. You know, to see Ipswich in League One, it doesn't quite seem right. But you know, there's a lot of big clubs in League One at the moment.
Yeah, well, yeah, Charlton is one of them, because you know, when I was growing up, it was, you know, Charlton were in the, you know, in the Premier League, and they were, you know, doing pretty well in the Premier League. And you know, at one stage, because I, you know, I'm an Ipswich fan, so a lot of our players were going to Cheltenham. It was like Chol Town at the time, because we had like Matt Holland, well, Darren Bent.
Herman Hryderson.
Yeah.
You know, you had Darren Bent. You had loads. You had four, five, six of them going just constantly. You know, Matty was going there.
Yeah.
There was Matty Holland. There was Bundles going there.
Yeah.
It was. It was like the ex Ipswich lot over to Charlton.
Pretty much. Yeah. Well, we'll get right into it. How I start these podcasts is from your early days, how you got into football, and how you became a goalkeeper, I'm sure. Or I don't know, you possibly could have been always a goalie, but sometimes when you grow up as a young kid, that isn't the first position you go and play in, is it? Your goalkeeper's never like, yep, don't want to do that. You normally give it to the, no offence, to the fat kid or whatever, they go and goal. But for yourself, how did you get into football? You know, did you have family or, you know, any friends that just got you into it?
The village that I was brought up in, just out in Cambridgeshire, it was very heavily involved in football. Only a small village at the time, and I used to play centre half, and I used to be involved in the Cubs, which was Cubs goes into Scouts, you know, and we had a football team there, and our goalie left, and inevitably they needed somebody to go in goal, and I just stuck my hand up and I said, yeah, I'll give it a go, and literally within a year. I was spotted by Norwich, went on trial, 3-week trial over in Finland with Norwich under 10s, and I didn't look back. It just progressed from there.
That's crazy, going all the way to Finland for a trial. That is.
They were taking an under 10s team to Finland to play in a tournament called the Cochlear Cup, and they didn't have a goalie, so they said, listen, just come along. This can be your trial. I think they needed me to fill a gap if I read between the lines. You know, because it's not how the academies are these days. You know, you would have personnel in place. So I went along, and I probably done a little bit better than they thought. We won the cup. It's an exceptional time. But as a 10-year-old going out 3 weeks with people that I'd never met before, no parents, it was very daunting, but it was something I really enjoyed.
Definitely. You said you joined Norwich as a trainee, and you know, you're from Bury, Greater Manchester, I think that's correct.
That's correct.
Going all the way to Norwich, you know, Norwich is a middle of nowhere really. So that must have been a big step for you as a young lad.
Yeah, no, so, you know, I was born in Greater Manchester, but I was actually brought up in Cambridgeshire. But it was still a, you know, a good hour and a half, 2 hours that I had to travel. And then eventually, at the age of 16, I moved over there. So, you know, from the age of 10 to when I left at 27, I was involved with Norwich City Football Club. So 17 years in total and 11 years living actually in Norwich itself. And I've got to say, 11 years, that's I thoroughly, thoroughly enjoyed living in the city of Norwich.
Yeah. You know, you went on to make your debut there in the Premier League. So playing top flight football, I don't know how old you were then. I should have got my facts right there, but I'm sure you're still young at that age.
19.
So, 19. You know, still young, playing the top flight of, you know, English football.
Yeah, it was something as a professional coach now I look at, and I wasn't ready for it, and I wasn't, and football was different back in the time that I was coming through. You didn't have goalkeeper coaches. I didn't have a full understanding of what football was all about, let alone goalkeeping, where these days as a 19-year-old, 20-year-old lad coming through, you would have a lot better understanding than what I did. I was thrust in the limelight simply because they had no one else to play. Brian Gunn had a serious injury and we weren't able to get anybody else in time, and by pure chance, on my home debut, got man of the match. So, it sort of led from there, and I ended up playing, I think, 25 games that season in the Premier League, which, you know, thrust me into the England limelight for the under-21s at the time. And suddenly you're put on the scene as you're going to be the next great thing that's going to come through as a footballer. And if the truth be known, you have no idea how you're going to cope with it, because there wasn't the same sort of support network in the academy or in development squads as what there is these days. So it was a little bit trial and error, to be honest.
Yeah. Well, it's actually one question now you're giving me, really, about goalkeeping coaching, because, you know, I don't know much about, you know, 90s and 80s of coaching, really. But back then, there were no goalkeeping coaches. So who would sort of coach you then? Was it just the manager did everything, or did you just, as goalkeepers, you just helped each other out?
You just helped each other out.
Yeah.
You would have it back in the day where Brian Gunn, as a senior first team goalkeeper coach, would take a goalkeeping session once a week.
Mm-hmm.
The rest of the time, you'd warm up with the team and do what the rest of the team did.
Yeah.
And you'd just be expected to perform, which you look at it now and it's actually crazy that was what happened. It's literally like asking an outfield player just to come along and do a goalkeeping session every day of the week and be expected to put 10, 15 goals in a season, in a season, and perform 90 minutes regularly at his optimum level. You're not going to do it. So, you know, as football's progressed and more money's come into football, the recognition of the goalkeeper has become paramount. And, you know, over the last 10 years particular, with the way Pep Guardiola has introduced the goalkeeper into playing out from the back, goalkeepers have become worth their weight in gold.
Definitely. And I want to bring up, you know, some of the managers you had at Norwich. You had Mike Walker, John Dean, who also crossed the divide as a player, Ipswich and Norwich. And then Martin O'Neill, that was probably his first proper big job. He did really well at Wickham, but he went there, unfortunately, you know. Well, Town fans will love it because they got relegated from the Premier League, but, you know, got relegated from the Premier League. Martin O'Neill came in. What was he like? You know, you, of course, went with him as well at Aston Villa.
Yeah, Martin was a different breed of manager at the time when he first came into Norwich, and working under the great Brian Clough, had many traits that the great Cloughy had.
Yeah.
But, you know, he only had a short time at Norwich. He only had 6 months. He felt he was probably misled in what he was sold at Norwich by the then chairman, Robert Chase, and very quickly moved on to Leicester. But in the period of time that I worked with him, I enjoyed it. I enjoyed my time with him. He made an impact on me. As football's evolved, you know, Martin's outlook of football is... you know, has evolved as well. And I was fortunate that towards the end of my career, he then took me into Aston Villa at the latter stages to be part of his team there. And again, you know, you're joining a fantastic club in Aston Villa. So, yeah, he was a very good manager. And like you said, I worked under the lights of Mike Walker, Dave Stringer, Nigel Worthington, Brian Hamilton, again, another Ipswich, Ipswich player. And, yeah, all of them, I got on with all the managers really well. And one thing I would always say about myself, I gave every manager everything I possibly could do. Whether I was good enough, that was something else. But I gave them everything I could have done. And, you know, one particular manager stands out in Bruce Rioch, who I had a particularly good time with. And, you know, I had a fairly enjoyable time working with Bruce and Brian Hamilton as his number two at the time.
Definitely. And, you know, you were player of the season in your last season there. And I'm going to go back a few more years before that. It's not a good memory, really, to bring up for you. You were, of course, in goal for the Destruction Derby, which has been labelled for, you know, Ipswich fans. Alex Matty, first-half hat-trick, Bobby Petter scoring two other goals. But for sure, your memories from that game, not a good day at the office for yourself.
One I want to try and forget until people like you keep bringing out.
Yeah, yeah.
No, listen. As you say, it'll be something that lives in the hearts and minds of the hard Ipswich fans for many a year. And Ipswich were in a good place at that time. You know, they were continually pushing for promotion, just missing out on in the playoffs. And they were a strong side. And Alex Matthew was going through a rich vein of form at that moment. So we weren't in a good place at Norwich. You know, I remember going into the game thinking, I didn't feel too confident going into this game. It just didn't feel right. Mm. Sometimes you just get this almost sixth sense of how you can feel how a game's going to go, and it just didn't feel right. And you try to put that negative force to the back of your mind, but you also can't help the fact of something just didn't feel right. And unfortunately, it really didn't go right that day for us.
Definitely.
And what made it even worse was I conceded 5 goals and then I got drug tested afterwards.
Oh.
So I ended up spending another 2.5 hours at Portman Road waiting to do my drug test. So, it was a very bad day for me in total.
Yeah, definitely. And, as I said, you were, player of the season in your last season and, you were going out of contract as well. So, having a fantastic season then, were you just looking for the future in terms of, you want to be going back to the Premier League? And, of course, Ipswich Town, was the place you went to. How did that sort of come about? It's a big move because the rivalry.
Yeah, it was a big move. I spent a long time at Norwich, and as I previously stated, I thoroughly enjoyed myself there, not only at the football club, but in the city. But they reached the point where you want to push yourself. I got player of the season. I'd been continually getting better year on year on year. And as you say, I wanted to go back to the Premier League. I wanted to test myself. I wanted to go to that extra level. And, the opportunity of Richard Wright going to Arsenal, that was one of only a few clubs that really came up. And it was a great opportunity to go to the Premier League and to be playing in a team that was going to be going into Europe. So it was an opportunity that I looked at and I knew I was going to take a lot of stick for it. Yeah. I knew it could go one way or the other. And I took the chance, me being me, I backed myself. I'm quite stubborn that way. And I thought, I've got to give this a go. It's too good an opportunity to turn down. I made the choice and I made the move in 2001.
Were you still living in Norwich for a while, or did you come down here? Because I'm sure if you were walking around Norwich, some fans would go, that's the Andy Marshall who just left us to go up there.
Yeah, no, I in my football, I've always sort of gone lock, stock and barrel. Whenever I go somewhere, I move full-heartedly.
Yeah.
Football's a career where you can't do it sort of half-heartedly. You can't sort of dip your toe in because you inevitably will fail if that happens. So, no, I moved back there immediately.
Cool. Well, of course, George Burley was the man that brought you in. Was he... what was he like as a man? Of course, he's, a legend at the club. But, did he straight away tell you what his plans were for you? And,
yeah.
Richard Wright, as you said, was leaving to go to Arsenal, so you were going to likely be the number one.
Yeah, basically that. And George was great. George was fantastic towards me as a man, as a coach. I thoroughly enjoyed working with George. And the time I had, and unfortunately at the end, and he departed the football club. It was a sad occasion for me because he was the man that brought me into the football club, and you feel a sense of failure when a manager loses their job, who brought you in, and you do, and if you've got anything about you as a person and a professional person, you do feel a sense of responsibility towards that.
Mm. Which players sort of helped you settle in? Of course, they'll be thinking, you're coming from a rival team, but with players, you just welcome players in. But,
yeah.
Which sort of players that sort of helped you?
No, listen, all the players at Ipswich were great at the time. You had a big character in Jim Magilton, and Jim just broke the ice very easily.
Yeah.
Very, very big character within him. But everyone was good, we had a lot of good players at the time, and we also in that summer we had quite a few players come in, new players, because obviously the European run that we were going to go on and the games that we were going to go and have, so there was quite a few new players coming in, as in like sort of Finidi George and people like that. Matteo Sereni came in as well. The club is a friendly club, and it was a club that was run by the players, and the players made sure everything was done right. So they accepted you and brought you into the football club as you needed to be brought in. But, somebody that I got on quite, very well with, who I still speak to these days, Mark Venus.
Mm.
He lived very close to where I live, so we used to spend a lot of time together.
That's cool. Of course, you had some injury setbacks. When I was doing some research on this, and I couldn't remember back then, but, you didn't play until January because you had them injuries. Sherini came in.
Yeah.
So what was going on back then?
Yeah, no, I was brought in, but I had it was basically, it's called an iliac psoas. I had an iliac psoas injury, which basically was pulling my spine over to one side.
Wow.
I got it after about three and a half weeks of being at the football club. And they couldn't diagnose what the problem was. And that was the real issue. Once it was diagnosed and they found out what the problem was, it was actually quite quickly remedied within about 2 or 3 weeks. But in that time, Matteo was brought in because the first game of the season was coming in. It was Sunderland.
Yeah.
And Matteo came in and he done well. And he did do well. And he was a big character. But I think he found it quite difficult with the amount of games we were playing coming from Italian football to playing, you know, your Saturdays and your Tuesdays, or when we were in Europe playing your Sundays and your Thursdays. I think he found it quite difficult to learn how to deal with that. And, you know, eventually I think that took its toll on him, and his performances maybe started to dip a little bit.
Definitely. And, you know, you must have been frustrated that getting injured. You know, town fans are probably waiting to jump on you when you're making your debut because you're coming from Norwich. But, you know, you didn't go on to make your debut until the Spurs game. It was a win against Spurs, so that must have been good for yourself, your home debut, and, you know, getting a win against a big side.
It was. I played the Cup game. Yeah, the week, I think it was the week before in the FA Cup. I think we won it 2-0.
Yeah,
I think we did. So and that went well, and I, you know, I think George probably looked at it and thought Matteo needed a bit, you know, maybe needed to come out of a bit of a break, and saw that as an opportunity. The game went well for myself, and as you say, the home game against Spurs, I played, and again, the game went well, and I had a decent game, and I started to get a run in the team then, and you know, it coincided that we started to pick up a few results, and we started to shift up the table a little bit.
Can you remember what the reaction were with fans when you, you know, came out to warm up and, you know, play?
They were brilliant.
Yeah.
Absolutely brilliant, because, you know, I was nervous about it. And I was, you know, I'm a very conscious person as a professional, as a footballer. I was very conscious about, you know, doing the right things and not wanting to fail. And the fans were great towards me. And the way the game went, it went very, very well. And it sort of endeared me initially to the fans, and I was grateful for that.
Because, yeah, as you said, you know, we were getting some results. So I was got the results here up here. You know, the next game was Derby, a 3-1 win. We lost in the FA Cup. We won't talk about that. But we beat Fulham 1-0 at home, and then go to Goodison Park and get an amazing result against Everton 2-1. So, you know, you've got a good winning run at the moment in the league.
Yeah, as you know, as I said, things started to pick up, and you know, I come into the team and results were going our way, and you're starting to think, okay, this is looking good. But football's one thing. When it least expects it, or when you least think it's going to happen, football will give you a kick up the backside and bite you when you least expect it. And that's one thing you learn, that when you've been in the game, particularly as long as I've been in it now, you know, you're always one result away from it potentially going wrong.
Which unfortunately was the next game after Everton, a 6-0 defeat against Liverpool at home. Never good for a goalkeeper to concede goals. You know, it's not always your fault, but of course you're in goal, you're conceding these goals. But you know, the memories of that game, I'm sure it's not great.
It is, and it's not. When you concede 6 goals, it's never good. And that was the first time, and I think maybe the only time I've ever conceded 6 goals. But ironically, I actually got man of the match that game.
Yeah.
That was the irony of the whole thing. And I can remember going in and being presented with it from John Walk afterwards. And I'm looking at him going, what the hell's just happened?
Yeah.
You know, this is absolutely crazy. I've been given man of the match. We conceded 6 goals, you know. Liverpool were in a good place. And they were. And, you know, you think we've gone on a run of winning a few games. We've pulled ourselves out of the relegation. We're starting to move up the table. And then we go and get smacked 6 by Liverpool.
Yeah, and you know, there's another game against Liverpool, which was the final game of the season, which saw us relegated, a 5-0 defeat at Anfield. Another bad defeat. But what was your, you know, memories of just us seeing relegation?
Yeah, and that is, you know, that's the harsh reality of this sport, is that it will bite you on the backside when you least expect it. Yeah. You know, when you think things are going to turn around, it's going to go well, that's then when it kicks you. And, yeah, unfortunately, it ended the season, as you say, with the 5-0 against Liverpool, with a defeat.
And before I move on to some other stuff at Town, I want to quickly bring up, you know, your time, you know, playing for England, you know, at youth level. Who was sort of in your age group back then?
So at 18s, we had, we won the European Cup, and we had the likes of Darren Caskey, Sol Campbell, Nicky Butt, Paul Scholes,
oh, wow.
Gary Neville. You know, we had an array of top players that every single player went on to have a top career in professional football. And then I moved on to the as it was then, the 21s, and the likes of Gary Neville, Phil Neville. Then the likes of Gary went up to the first team, and Paul Scholes the same, and then Nicky Butt the same. Chris Casper came in from Man United. A certain David Beckham then joined us, who, when we first started playing, you know, with the 18s, he wasn't good enough to get in the England under 18s. You know, that's the irony. You know, David actually missed out. When they picked the team, David was one of the, like, the peripheral players that missed out on that tour, which is, you know, you look at now and you think it's crazy, but that is what happens in football. So I was fortunate. I was very fortunate at a young age to play with some exceptionally good footballers who went on to have top careers. You know, and I was fortunate the times that I played in the Premier League and times that I've coached, I've come back up against these people, you know, because a lot of them have stayed in football.
Yeah, definitely. And of course, you know, you played against Man United for Ipswich, and, you know, Paul Scholes, I think, played in that game. I've got the team up now. I don't think David Beckham was playing, but you had Phil Neville. So you're coming up against these, you know, players, you know, you all grown up now in a way. You know, this is probably 10 years prior to that. So, yeah, that must be a good experience.
No, listen, they're fantastic experiences. And again, you know, I repeat myself, you don't fully realise what they all are until you sit back at your end of your career and you do think about it. Because at the time, you literally just go from one game to one training session to one game. And that's how your life is as a footballer. And that's not trying to be derogatory in any way about anything. It's just how you are, because you're so wrapped up in it and it moves and evolves so quickly.
Definitely. Okay, of course, go back to Town career, and Joe Rawle, of course, came in. George got sacked and Joe came in, of course. Another person who crossed the Ipswich and Norwich divide, because he was a Norwich player back in his playing career, and now he's becoming Town manager. What was your first reaction when Joe came in? Did you know much about him?
I obviously knew about Joe Rawle. And, you know, one thing you know about Joe Rawle around that time was that Joe would make something successful. We, you know, Ipswich at the time, we were going through a little bit of a tough time. We were just about middle of the table, I believe. And you know Joe's going to come in and turn the club around and start picking up results. But it became very clear that I wasn't going to be suited towards Joe Rawle. And Joe was great with me. There was no animosity. No, you know, there was nothing. There was no bad word said. And it was just very clear. He just said, listen, you're not for me. It's just as clear as that. It's just as simple as that. And he, you know, he treated me with respect. He treated me the right way. I did things the right way. I went in every day. I worked hard. Just got my head down. He brought Kelvin Davis in. And Kelvin, again, a very good friend of mine who I used to play with England. And we came through a similar age group. So Kelvin was brought in and done a very good job. And I just came in, worked every day. Club treated me right. I treated the club right. And eventually the situation arose that I was able to get out and go to Millwall on loan. So, you know, it didn't end the way I wanted it to end at Ipswich. It's a great club, a proper good club. And, you know, I remember back to the Premier League when I was playing there and the fans that were there, and you're getting just short of 30,000 turn up. The noise that they made is phenomenal. And, you know, to see the club have gone down how it's gone down, it's sad. You know, it is sad, because I was there when it was going through some very good times.
Definitely. And, you know, before we move on to Millwall in the FA Cup final, I want to bring up, of course, your return to Carrow Road in that 2-0 Town win against Norwich. Yeah, that is a, you know, it was a massive game for you because that's probably the first time you're going back to Norwich. You know, we played them prior in at home in a 1-1 draw, but this is your return to Carrow Road, and I'm sure, you know, Norwich fans were not pleased to see you return.
No, they weren't. They weren't best pleased, and I don't think they've ever been best pleased to see me since, because I think every time I've gone there, I've never been defeated. So, and predominantly usually beaten Norwich. But the, you know, everyone at Ipswich was great, and how they dealt with the situation. You know, they knew what was going to come my way. They knew the animosity that was shown against me. I understood the animosity that was going to come my way, and you know, I took a lot of grief that day and many subsequent days since. But all it ever did was inspire me to play and perform to a higher level. So, you know, I used to embrace situations like that. You can sink or swim. And to me, it always used to, you know, endear me to want to perform at a higher level. But the way the lads were with me, and as you state, the first game that we went back though, we won 2-0. And the way that the players were, they knew how much that would have meant to me. And I thank them for pulling that 2-0 result off for us.
Yeah. Because, you celebrated pretty wildly, you know, of course, as a goalkeeper, you can't really get away from the fans because you're in the goal. Both goals are behind pretty much Norwich fans. So you were always going to get stick, even if, you know, you were away from them. So, and of course, that day, Dean Bodic came on the scene and he, you know, as a very young 17-year-old, or 16-year-old, I think, at the time, he had a game of his life and, a great win.
Yeah, no, it was one of those where even getting off the coach, there was thousands of fans that turned up just because they wanted to give me the stick and the grief. And when I went out to warm up, you know, the end behind the goal was practically full. Now, that never happens, you know, an hour before kickoff when the goalie's going to go out and warm up. There might be a few people out there. This was practically full. And it was there. And every single ball that was kicked, I caught. Anything that I dropped, anything, I was just getting caned for. So all it did was make me focus and get more attention to what I needed to do. And it really did drive me on. And, you know, that is one thing that I could look back on and I think, you know what, I'm proud of what I did on that and how I dealt with that situation, because it was very intimidating. The fans were very intimidating towards me. But, you know, I was able... For all the work that I've done in my career on how I train and how I played, I was able to pull on all them resources and get me through that game.
Definitely. You know, there's one thing what you're probably happy about was, you know, there wasn't social media properly back then. So, you know, I'm sure there would have been a lot of stuff going on social media. I know probably as players, you sort of take that away. Don't bother looking at it at that time when it's a derby or a whatever thing, because, you know, you don't want it to affect you. I'm sure you wouldn't have bothered with it.
No, I would have stayed away from it. But you are right. That wasn't around, particularly nowhere near what it is these days. And whether that would have rallied it any more, I'm not sure, because it was pretty vicious anyway. But I look back on it, and I look back on it with a wry smile on my face, because I went back to Norwich a couple of years ago, and I played in a charity game against Inter Milan, and there was a good 20,000 fans there. And you know, it started off very anti-me, but by the end of it, I think they appreciated what I was doing. You know, the fact I went back there, it was for a charity, it was to raise money. And at the end of it, we put all that aside and we deal with what the actual cause is all about. And it was good to clear the air on that one.
Yeah, I'm sure you're just hoping for another player to cross the divide, so then you're not the only one. Because, you know, as I said, it has happened before, like John Dean did it. And I think Trevor Putney as well in the 80s, but
That's it.
There's no one really else. But so maybe one day, I don't know, we'll wait and see. Well, of course, we'll move on to your loan spell to Millwall. And during that time, you know, Dennis Wise was the player manager, and you had a little trip to play in the FA Cup final against Man United, unfortunately on the losing side. But, you know, I think it's anybody's dream, boyhood dream, to play an FA Cup final. You know, if you lose it, it's one of those things. But what an experience for you, being a lone player as well.
Yeah, it was crazy. I'd just gone from one local rival to another, and all the grief that I got, and that I played in the local derby, and all the grief that I was getting this that way and everything from all the fans. And I thought, right, okay, I now need a fresh challenge. And Millwall comes up, the reputation of their fans, and you're thinking, yeah. Oh my God, do I really want this? And I'm thinking to myself, really, I'm not sure this is going to be right. Anyway, I went down, I met Dennis and Ray Wilkins, God bless his soul, and had a good chat with them. We went through everything, and straight away, you just warm to the place. You just warm to them, what they're all about. And it's very similar to what we're trying to build at Charlton at this moment in time. And it just had a real good feel factor about it. And then when I started playing for Millwall, and the way the fans were to me, and they just did, they endeared me. And, you know, I'd done well for them, and we got to the cup final that year, and we were up against it. We had three of our main players out, and you know, you're playing Man United anyway. And as you stated, we ended up losing 3-0. But it was probably one of my best times that I enjoyed playing football was at Millwall, believe it or not. Yeah. There was just something about it, the way the whole thing was. And I was just endeared by it.
Yeah. It's crazy to think, you know, that, you know, Millwall in a championship at that point. So getting to the FA Cup final is an amazing achievement anyway, because you know, now it's normally the top six that normally get into the final. You know, this year was Arsenal and I've forgotten the team already.
Man City, was it?
Man City, I think. Yeah, so that is normally, you know, Wigan, of course, and Portsmouth have won it, you know, recently, yeah. You know, them sort of names. But, you know, Millwall to get to, a final of the FA Cup is just, it wouldn't happen probably now.
Well, all the sayings came out when we got to the final, you know, from The Only Fools and Horses and Grandad saying, yeah. You know, making a statement, yeah, well, it's like Millwall winning the FA Cup final.
Yeah.
But that all came out. But you've got to remember at the time, we were fortunate in some of the draws that we had. Mm-hmm. But you've also got to remember at the time, we just missed out on the playoffs. And it was only the distraction of the FA Cup that made us miss out on the playoffs to go to the Premier League. So we had a pretty decent side. It weren't like we were mugs. You know, we weren't a poor side. We were a decent side. But as you state, it's predominantly Premier League teams that will get there.
Definitely. You know, you had a good couple of seasons. You said you're maybe one of your best times in your career playing for Millwall. And, you know, you're there for a few seasons. And I've just got some stats up here. I'm seeing a few red cards. Can you remember any of those?
I can't actually, no. I got a few red cards. Oh, there was one at Reading, I think.
Yeah, 23 minutes.
Yeah, I remember that one. I think I came flying out and I think I might have took the man rather than the ball, which, I think even endeared me even more to the Millwall fans because, you know, the next best thing to them winning a game of football is a player getting aggressive and, you know, causing some problems. And that's what Millwall fans are like. So it sort of suited the way that I like to play anyway. You know, I was quite forthright and quite aggressive in my nature and manner of playing. I remember that one against Reading away. I can't remember any more, but I've had a few red cards in my career.
Definitely. And before we, of course, unfortunately, you know, you suffer relegation with Millwall to League One. But what was it like having sort of Dennis Wise? Because at the time he was like a player manager. That must have been interesting.
Den was great. He was fantastic. The way that he was about everything, but there was issues within Millwall, and you always knew that if it wasn't going to be invested at the right time, it could go the wrong way. And when Dennis realised there wasn't going to be an investment, he stepped aside and walked away. And at that point, as senior players thought, we're in for trouble here. We know this is going to go seriously wrong. And this new chairman came in and instead of investing into the club, actually started to strip the club of the better players. And we ended up with basically a second string side. And it became, you know, became quite inevitable a little bit to a certain extent with what happened at Charlton last season. When it just shows if you don't get the right investment and you don't support the manager the right way, the inevitable will happen. And that is what happens in football.
Definitely. And, you know, your next spell was at Coventry. You know, you played under Ian Dowie and also Chris Coleman. What were they like as managers?
Brilliant. Mickey Adams brought me in.
Of course.
And when Mickey moved on, Ian came in. And Ian's, what a character, just full of life. Got on ever so well with Ian. But unfortunately, it didn't work out for him. There was, again, ownership issues within the football club at Coventry, and promises were made. And eventually, it was the right thing for Ian to move on. And then Chris Coleman came in, and an absolute phenomenal man, an absolute fantastic man, and very knowledgeable in the game of football. But is the way his demeanour, the way he conducted himself, a proper gentleman.
Of course, you must have been, you know, pleased to see him do so well for Wales. You know, taking them that far in that tournament.
Yeah, no, that was great to see. Not only what could be classed as one of the, you know, I don't want to say lesser countries, but you know, one of the ones that has not been so successful. But for Chris to do that, it was phenomenal.
Definitely. And then your next move was to Premier League side Aston Villa. Of course, at that stage of your career, you know, at Coventry was the last time you properly played games. But you joined Aston Villa, and did you feel? I think I've got my right. You were going to think about you're going into your coaching, but you're still happy to be around, being as signing on as a player still, because you're still at that age where you want to continue playing if you needed, because your goalkeepers can go on until you're 40 plus sometimes. So how'd that move sort of come about?
Yeah, I think that's a fair reflection, is that I knew I was coming towards the back end of my career. What I didn't personally want to do was, and it's no disrespect to anybody, but I didn't want to start to become a journeyman and travel around and go from club to club to club. I wanted to try and finish my career off as high as possible. You know, I'd worked hard all my career, and you know, that's what I wanted to try and do. And the opportunity at Aston Villa came up with Martin O'Neill. We knew each other. So it was a great opportunity for me. Initially, I didn't think, wasn't so much thinking about the coaching position, but the longer time I spent at Aston Villa, they must have recognised some qualities within me, within potentially coaching. They started to involve me with the under-23s, not only just doing the goalkeeping, but also actually in the team selections and on match days. And it was great experiences for me. And at that point, then I realised I'm going to start transitioning from playing into the coaching side of it and start learning. And I started taking my badges and I started doing the coaching in the evening at Aston Villa, doing coaching the young goalies. And it was all fantastic experiences for me, because what it allowed me to do was almost jump ahead a little bit of myself, rather than having to wait till my end of my football career and then start doing the coaching at the lower levels, as in the younger age groups. I was able to sort of jump through that because I was doing it while I was still playing. And as a player, you know, you have a lot more credibility towards the other young goalkeepers, because, you know, all of a sudden you've got a professional footballer coaching you. So it enabled me to jump forward very, very quickly and fast forward my coaching and doing my badges at the same time, that almost by the time it actually came and was thrust upon me, I wouldn't say I was ready, but I was almost ready. You know, I look at where I'm at now and I look at where I was 4 years ago as a coach, and it's night and day. But it put me in a position that I could cope and could deal with the actual coaching side of it.
Of course, you know, you had, you know, some experienced goalkeepers to work with at, you know, Aston Villa as well. Your experienced goalkeeper, you had like Brad Friedel and Shay Given, who came in as well.
Yeah, and I think that's key to what helped me become relatively successful very early in my coaching, was having them senior boys. Because if I did make a mistake, they would know I'd made a mistake, but they would be smart enough and they would be experienced enough to rectify it themselves. So I was very fortunate to have them guys though at that moment in time. And, you know, Shay's now working at Derby and is a good friend of mine, and we speak regular. You know, and if he can become half a coach of what he did as a player, he will have a pretty decent career as well.
Definitely. And, you know, you mentioned it earlier, you know, Paul Lambert became, you know, Villa manager when you were still sort of playing in the playing side of it. What was your relationship with him, you know, early then? Of course, he brought you back in as a goalkeeping coach as well.
Yeah, the irony is that Paul actually got rid of me as a player. So I'm thinking, oh, Jesus, thanks. Yeah, fair, cheers. So no, I got on really well with Paul as a player, and I was thinking, oh, okay. When it comes to renew my contract, he's like, you know, sorry, son, you're going. And then he brought Jed Steer in from Norwich. So I'm like, Jesus Christ. And then 8 months later, he then calls me up and says, listen, Marsh, do you want to come back and be goalkeeper coach? So I'm like, wow, this is fantastic. So I get that opportunity. And then subsequently, as I've moved on and gone on, I've actually then taken Jed Steer to Charlton. You know, the guy who actually nicked my spot as a player, I've now actually taken him on loan. So, no, it worked out really well. I had a good time, and I was fortunate that in that short time as coaching there, as a first team coach, I got to work with Roy Keane for 6 months. Yes. And, you know, and working alongside him and seeing him as a character and seeing how he works, it's an eye-opener. And, you know, for any young coach out there, and myself, I'm still a young coach, but the more experiences that you can have working with different people and finding out how they operate, I can only say it can only help you, because you just try and take all their qualities and you take all their little bits of their qualities and how they operate. And if you can surround yourself with people that have become successful in what they do, I've been quite fortunate. I've worked with some successful managers, you know, Martin O'Neill, Gerard Houllier. You know, they've had good careers. I now work with Lee Bowyer, who's had an exceptional career as a player, and I'm sure he will do as a manager. And if you can surround yourself with people like this, it can only help open your eyes to doing things the right way.
Definitely. And, you know, you've got a nice win, one win as a manager or interim manager with Scott Marshall.
Yeah.
What was that experience like? You know, of course, Tim Sherwood was, you know, in the stands anyway, but I'm sure that was, you know, a very interesting experience in the FA Cup against Leicester at Villa Park as well. You won, yeah. So happy days.
Yeah. No, it was fantastic. It was a great experience for myself and Scott. And I have to remember, it was only like 7 months into my coaching career.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, to be thrust and asked to do that, it was like, wow. All of a sudden, you're taking responsibility for all these people. And the game on Saturday, it's your responsibility. And Scott Marshall was fantastic. He helped me. He helped me through that. He was more experienced as a coach than me. So he predominantly led it. But I was supporting him. But it was a fantastic experience. And to then go on and then work with our first team at Villa again, and then work with our 23s at Villa, and then keep dipping my toe in and out at Aston Villa, a club which I hold dear to my heart. It was great, but the best thing I learned from that was when I came to Charlton and was able to transition. And at the time, Charlton were in League One, and to come to the football club and be part of help starting to revolutionise it and change it and change its outlook. It was great, and I got all that knowledge and helped put Charlton, you know, where it's at this moment in time through the work I've got from Aston Villa. You know, I've taken all that knowledge and the people I've worked with there, and if I hadn't had that, I wouldn't know half the stuff I know at this moment in time.
Because, yeah. You know, you retired at 38, I think, or 39. You know, you had that brief little spell return to Millwall, but did you just feel that was your time up and you were definitely now fully focused on your coaching?
Well, when I left Aston Villa, I was 38 and I was desperately trying to get to 40. Mm-hmm. So I went to Millwall and the opportunity came there for me to go and train there. And then, you know, there was a couple of injuries, so I was able to get involved. But fundamentally, just before my 39th birthday, old injuries caught up with me. And when you get to 39 years old nearly and you're climbing out of bed and you're having to crawl along the floor because your back's gone, you start looking at your quality of life to what you're sacrificing that quality of life for. And it just wasn't worth it. If I was 27, 28 or 21, you'd say, yes, it is worth it. But when you're nearly 39, you've had your career, you're putting yourself through hell, your family's suffering because of it, you've got to knock it on the head at some point and realise your time's done. And that was the time when I got out of bed that morning, and I went into the training ground at Millwall, and I played an in-house game, and I said to myself, I'm going to give it till half time, and if it's no good, that's me done. Yeah. Got to half time, and I turned around to the goalkeeping coach at Millwall, Kevin Pressman. I said, "That's me, I'm finished." And he looked at me and he went, "What? What are you on about?" I said, "I can't do it anymore. I said, the injuries are caught up with me." And he said, "Listen, take a couple of days off, have a think about it." He was great with me, Kevin Pressman. So I did, and I called him up and I said, "Sorry, Kev, but you know, that's me. Time's caught up with me." And that was my career done, and I moved on. And I took a little bit of time out before I got the call from Paul Lambert and went in coaching. So, yeah, no regrets. No regrets on anything. The move to Ipswich, no regrets. You know, everything that I've done in my football career, I've done 100%. I've given it everything. If I was successful, I was successful through hard work. If I failed, I failed because I simply wasn't good enough. Because I'd never fail because I've not done it the right way.
Brilliant. Well, I want to just ask you a few more questions if that's the right with you.
Of course.
You know, did you ever, were you that sort of player that would take, you know, get shirts from different, you know, players and stuff like that?
There's a few I've got, yeah. And I got them all framed up. Yeah, I've got people like David Siemens, and I've got Gigi Buffon from years ago when I played against him. There are a few. I wouldn't get loads. Mm-hmm. No, I wasn't one of them that every game I had to get it, because I'd be too focused on the game. And it sounds a little bit obnoxious, and it wasn't being obnoxious. It's just because I was so focused on just playing the game. Or if I lost, then I'd be too peed off, to be honest, to go and ask them. So, yeah, I've got a few. I've got a few framed up in my house, and I've got a few put away. I've got a favourite, actually, and it's not a football one. It's actually a racing one. It's Michael Schumacher's.
Oh, cool.
A signed Michael Schumacher one, which is all framed up from his racing days.
Oh, brilliant. Well, of course, you know, you're now at Charlton. You know, you've had the ups and downs there, because, you know, you got promoted to the Championship, and then last season with, you know, COVID and stuff, and you know, other things going on, you know, got relegated. But your first season there, you won promotion, so that must have been a great time as a coach to be part of that situation. How did that sort of come about, the Charlton sort of thing?
Yeah, so I've been out of work after I left Aston Villa, I'd been out of work for about 7-8 months, and I'd gone on holiday, and I'd applied for a job at Arsenal to work within their academy, in their development squad, because I was going mad. I needed to get a job. Literally got a phone call on holiday saying that I wasn't successful in it, and I was quite down on, and I really was down, because you know, I was just desperately wanting to get back and work. You know, me sitting around every day, it's not healthy. And I was really, really down. And then literally 2 days later, I got a text from, as I stated earlier, my good friend Shay Givens, stating that Lee had called him up, Lee Bowyer, asking did he know a goalkeeper coach, because his goalkeeper coach had just left, Lee Turner, to go to Millwall. And Shay had put my name forward. So Lee had texted me, knowing that I was on holiday, and we arranged to meet up when I got back. I had a meeting with him. A week later, I had a meeting with the team, as in like the coaching team. And a couple of days after that, I was told that I got the job. I'd known Lee for a long time, from playing with him back in England days. But we hadn't seen each other for a very, very long time. And yeah, it just sort of went from there. And I had to get to know how he wanted to work, and he needed to get to know myself, how I worked, and Johnny Jackson, the assistant manager, and Steve Gallen, the recruitment. And we all needed to get to know how each other worked. And within that, we're fighting against an owner that didn't want the football club. We're fighting against a football club in disarray. We've got fans, you know, the first game of the season, I remember it clearly. And I stood on the sidelines with Johnny Jackson, the assistant manager, and I said, "John, this is a fantastic stadium." I said, "But there's no one here." He said, "Marsh," he said, "you want to see this place when it's rocking." He says, "It's something else." He says, honestly, and I'm standing there thinking, "You're joking." It literally felt like there was tumbleweeds blowing across the field and there was no one there, but there was like 9,000 fans. And this was the first game of the season. And I'm thinking, you know, how are we going to turn this around? The club's in absolute disarray. You know, the next game was the next home game of the season, next home game. You know, the fans were protesting. They're throwing crisp packets on the pitch. And you're thinking, we've got no chance. We've got no chance. If they're throwing Chris Pagis on the pitch in protest against the owner, the owner's not wanting the football club, and there's huge fractions within the football club. And we're having to try and gel all this together. Anyway, it's gone on and on and on. We become a little bit successful. We get a role. Anyway, from going from 9,000 fans the first game of the season, we get to the last game of the season, which is the playoff game, the second playoff game, and we sold out. We've got 27,500 people there. We win it on penalty shootout. There's a pitch invasion, and we go to Wembley and win that to get promoted. And the point I'm trying to raise is we built all this literally against all odds. In the Championship, again, it was against all odds, and everything was thrown at us. And unfortunately, on the last day, we got relegated. We've now got an owner at Charlton in Thomas Sangard who is desperate to support us and desperate for the club to do well. So it can only give us the best opportunity to try and rebuild this football club how it needs to be rebuilt. And, you know, and part of that is the knowledge that I've got from the background of the work that I've done, Lee's knowledge in professional football, and the staff that we've got around us, you know, and they're doing things the right way. And it's great from our point of view to have such support for once.
Definitely. Were you ever at a stage where you were like, you know, worried about your job, or, you know, because Lee was always on the, you know, I remember it was Lee every day. It was like, will he go? Will he stay? You know, and, you know, he came in there as a caretaker and he's done a fantastic job. Of course, he had a little spell at Ipswich as well as a player. So, yeah. You know, he's got that connection there. But, you know, I'm sure you probably didn't want that earlier in your coaching career. But, you know, they're doing okay now. As you say, you've got a new owner. So, you know, hopefully the way is up now.
I think the thing about the industry that I'm involved in, and any football person involved in this industry, you're only a few games away from the sack. Mm-hmm. And you are. And it's the harsh reality. And that's what drives you on as a football coach and a footballer. You know, it might sound crude. It might sound that I'm being negative. It's not. It's just the harsh reality of this job. Unfortunately, you know, we're speaking today and Sam Ricketts at Shrewsbury has lost his job as the manager. You know, they're second bottom. It's a results industry. It's a ruthless industry that we work within. And all the young players that I coach and I bring through, as well as working with the first team, you try and stress this to them as much as possible. This is a ruthless, ruthless industry. There's not many industries as ruthless as this, that they build you up so much, that they make so much of you, but they will kick you and spit you out. And it is a ruthless industry. And when you come to terms with how vicious it can be, then you won't be disappointed and you won't be upset by what it can do to you, because you know, as I stated, you're only a few games away from losing your job in this industry.
Definitely. And, you know, for a goalkeeper, that's, you know, only that's just the one position that can be filled. You know, you're gonna have to be a backup or you have to leave. Like, you know, it must be good for yourself to see, you know, a young goalkeeper in Dylan Phillips. He's gone to Cardiff, you know, had a good spell at Charlton, and now he's gone there. You know, I'm sure there's some other good promising, you know, goalkeepers coming through at Charlton. You know, Ben Amos is there now as well, you know, a player at Man United during his early days. Are you excited for the future there?
No, we are. Yeah. And it was great to see Dylan do so well over the last 18 months, 2 years. Yeah. Secure his move to Cardiff. Fantastic young goalkeeper. He's a credit to his family and to the football club when he was here. The way he conducts himself, he was phenomenal. And I'm very pleased to see that he's gone on, and hopefully he'll get into the team at Cardiff. But he's against Alex Smith. He's an exceptional young goalkeeper as well. But we have some very talented young lads here. And to have Ben Amos, he's literally your ultimate professional. Any football club out there would be privileged to have someone like Ben Amos, because the way he conducts himself, and he's a total role model to all the other young goalkeepers at our football club. So, no, it's great. We're having a good time. You know, we won't talk about the Burton results too much, but generally we're heading in the right direction as a football club. You know, it's down to us as the coaching staff and the manager to keep pushing the players in the right direction. And hopefully, a bit of luck and we do things the right way, we'll be challenging for promotion again at the end of the season.
That's good. And Before I end this chat with you, I just want to go back to your career and just ask you a few little questions on the best players that you played against and best players you played with. So who would you say is the best player you played against? There's a lot of strikers to name. Yeah.
Thierry Henry, Arsenal. Yeah. Phenomenal. Absolutely phenomenal. You know, when he had his little purple patch, every time he got the ball, just played him behind, he was just going to score. And that's what he did do. Yeah. Phenomenal player. But I've got to say, very close behind it, if not maybe tipping him, Dennis Bergkamp. So yeah, had to mention that one.
Of course.
Best player I played with, I was very fortunate I played with David Beckham,
of course,
so I've got to say him.
Who would you say is the best goalkeeper you sort of were against?
Best one I was against, you know, the one that played consistently the best against me was Nigel Martin. Just a very good goalkeeper. Just consistently good all the time. So I'd probably have to say him. But when I played against David Seaman, the guy just oozed class. Yeah. And he did. He just oozed it. So one of them two.
Of course, you're part of the goalkeeper union and all that. Do you know, when you play against other teams, I'm sure you always chat maybe to the goalkeeping coach. You probably know maybe of them.
Yeah. Well, like these days now, it's my type of generation of goalkeepers that are now starting to come through from when we played against each other. So a lot of us know each other. You know, there's some of those that are a little bit older than me. But those that were goalkeeper coaches when I was a young player, most of them are starting to retire now. So, the next generation of coaches, which is my generation, is now coming through.
Cool. Well, Andy, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you very much for joining me. Anything else you want to add before we wrap up?
No, listen, Ross, as I stated earlier, I've had a phenomenal career, as in how I've enjoyed it, how I've worked so hard, and the people that I've met. And it's been a pleasure and a privilege to be involved in football. You know, the ups and downs of it, the highs and lows are like you'll never believe. And it's one of them. I think I'm too institutionalised into it now to do anything else. So hopefully for myself, many years of coaching in the future.
From true crime to football, Brexit to Oakville. For more great podcasts from Archon, head to audioboom.com/channel/Archon.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
A laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry, we were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right, ChumbaCasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. ChumbaCasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.